A bit of what?
It's a bit of Monica.
Fireside.
A little bit.
That's it.
I don't know any of them. I don't know any of them.
Do we not have our music?
Welcome to AE Double Back for March 17th.
Oh my God.
21.
Wait, what was that? March 17th? I'm not sure if I heard that.
I thought you fixed the music.
This entire week has just been a shit show. So
yeah,
why
true.
Should the show be any different?
That's true.
Welcome. Thanks for coming. We've got a hell of a show to talk about. So.
It's St. Patrick's Day. Do you want to hear
and I'm not
St. Patrick's
drunk.
Day joke?
Oh, damn it. I thought. Yes, I do again.
Why does an Irish chili only have 139 beans?
I don't know, Teresa. Why does an Irish chili only have 139 beans?
Because one more would be too farty.
Okay. I thought I misheard the first time. You're saying 139 plus one more makes 240. It should be 239.
Oh, that's right. That's right, 239.
Look, that's classic Irish math.
Look, that makes it even better.
How many people, you're in front of a public crowd. You have an audience and you blew it. You had your one shot to become an Irish-themed comedian.
You know, I never really anticipated going into the field of Irish-themed comedy.
You got to grab the brass wing, and it's
the brass wing. I think that Ireland is like distantly behind England and Scotland in the comedy game.
You think?
Really?
Well, I feel
such
like
great comedy festivals, though.
They might have great festivals, but I feel like it's all people from elsewhere. Because like every comedian I can think of that is from the British Isles is English or is Scottish.
I don't know. I know some really funny Irish people, though.
Yeah, I feel like you're talking about like people who have achieved mainstream success in the United States, which is a different thing entirely.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cast aspersions on the Irish, not because it's St. Patrick's Day, but just because, you know, it's a kinder, gentler Jan that we're dealing with.
And, they don't
someone who wouldn't have done that 10 years ago.
They don't need the charity of you laying off. They are tough enough to take it.
Well, you know what else? Who else is really tough? Penta and Cody.
Oh, we're not even going to talk about the Four Horsemen getting off the plane. I know they're not called the Four Horsemen, but
you can talk
they
about
should
it.
Be called the Four Horsemen. No, yeah. That's it. They just because this is a shot that is very reminiscent of the old Four Horsemen. It was the sort of thing they would do. They would come off a plane so that you would know that they're you know, wheeling and dealing, spending that money. They're
flying
like big
instead
shots.
Of driving.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is always a big negotiating tactic when it comes to traveling.
But this is a private plane. We're not even talking about like coach. This is the real deal.
Very true.
So it's like a great image that I really liked. We'll talk about it. I'm disappointed that they're not called the Four Horsemen.
But all right. Anyway. Well, I don't really care. So here we go with the first match of the night. This entire show was really great. There's so much that I liked. I know Robert's going to disagree with me, but I liked so much about this. Okay. First of all,
how can you tell you what you liked or didn't like?
We'll find out.
I'm not going to go through it now because we should just talk about it match by match. So the first match is Penta versus Cody. I was so excited that they kicked it off with this since last week. It was so intriguing and Penta was really fucking with Cody and Cody was so pissed off. So it's great to start off with this match I was really looking forward to. Penta looks so fucking great. And he did a small little promo while he was walking out. They like just threw up a little screen of him doing a small little promo. He sounded great. He put a St. Patrick's Day hat on. I mean, it was great. He looked so fucking good. I love everything about him. And the match itself was really great. There's some things in there that I still don't quite understand how they did it. There is this top rope flip thing where Cody flips Penta. It looked like he was flipping him end over end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know what that is. I don't think I've ever seen it before. It looked cool as well as nasty. I just wrote, goddamn, Penta is cool.
This is true.
He has awesome poses, awesome moves. He's always giving these great looks to the camera. He hot dogs in a great way that I love. There were three different sections to this match because we have Penta versus Cody. Penta lost to a roll up, and it really didn't look like it didn't look likely, but whatever, it happened.
Yeah, you know? That's my big beef with this match is that the ending felt like, okay, we have a story to tell, so we're just going to
That's exactly how it came across. It was a bummer about that. But then after that, then Penta starts beating up Cody, and Dustin and the Gun Club chase Penta away, which he doesn't really run away. He just hot dogs out. He like is walking around. He's going around with the crowd. He puts on this little green bowler, you know, it was great, and taunting and stuff. Anyway, so QT Marshall comes out late and the other guys are pissed off he's late. So it's like we've got Penta versus Cody, and then we've got Dustin and the Gun Club with Penta kind of chasing him away. And then we have this story again where they are mad at QT at the end. So, you know, it's pushing some storylines. I'm
also, bummed. Though, where's Lee Johnson? He's still part of the Nightmare family, yeah, right? Yeah,
where the fuck is he?
So why aren't they mad at Lee?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, probably no reason.
All right, then.
Okay. That was a little... okay.
I really thought that I would have something if, like...
you started the sentence and figured that you would be able to close it by the end?
You're in front of an audience. You just blew it in front of an audience. What are you going to do?
Really embarrassed myself. See,
we all do it. It happens. It's no big deal because you know what? That moment is gone forever and you just move on to the next. Oh, man. Yeah, that's what I learned doing 13 shows a night on a ship. 13 shows. No, I'm sorry. Not a night. Oh, my God. 13 shows a week. Wow. Ugh, God, if that was in one night, I think I would have died. Anyway.
I will say that I feel like the Destroyer is officially over and I'm furious. Because the Canadian Destroyer is an amazing move, and now, arguably, it died when Dustin started doing it. But just today, as I was watching Cody doing, I was just like, "Ugh, this is the most." It was kind of like when super kicks were a big deal.
Yeah.
Like you know, you'd get one every once in a long time, and then you know, like for a while, it was sort of a Shawn Michaels thing. Like it's a big finisher. Like, this is the finish. There's no more match after this when it happens. Now it's just like a thing that just happens, like, you know, 15 seconds into a match or whatever. And it's a shame because it is a really impressive looking thing when it's done right. And now who cares? I don't want to see it ever again.
I don't really mind that just seems like a natural evolution of things. Like, nobody would ever have to come up with something new if the original like five moves continued to destroy for all time.
Yeah, it is natural, and I'm not saying that, you know, like it wouldn't have happened eventually. It just hit me harder just because like it was a thing that I thought was really that I specifically thought was really cool.
I did like it in this match, though.
It's another moment of your childhood getting torn away from you slowly by this cruel world.
Hey.
And by childhood, you mean like 2.5 years ago when I first saw it.
You child. Yes.
It's like a sled that somebody did a flying elbow onto from the top rope. Shattered into 1,000 pieces.
Jam their elbow into my rosebud. That doesn't sound pleasant at all.
Well, to each his own.
Anywho,
I gave this whole thing a thumbs up, mostly because it's Penta and he's fantastic. And I mean, the match was filled with lots of great things, but I just can't say enough positive things about Penta, and I want him to have the world.
This was the first of many segments tonight where I wasn't sure whether I should thumb it up or thumb it in the middle. Mm-hmm. The match itself was fantastic. All of the stuff at the end, all of the booking stuff was like, I don't care about the Nightmare Family. Mm-hmm. I can't tell if Penta's feuding with Cody or if this is, just something to give a little bit of spice to this whole QT Marshall thing, which I do not care about. I deeply do not care about.
A veritable Irish stew of wrestling.
How dare you? I told you that. I told you that I ruined that Irish stew in confidence. And now you're going to bring it up publicly? That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, we'll you're the one with laundry. The farty stew.
We've all jacked up something tonight.
I am going to give this one a provisional thumbs up.
Wow. And when do we get the final on that?
I mean, we'll see. If it turns out that this turns into a real Cody Penta feud and it goes on and we get a whole mess of great matches, then I will allow this to be a full thumbs up. But until then, maybe it'll go to a middle at some point.
Yeah.
Calder?
I thumbed it up just because I thought the match was a solid opener. I also cannot say I'm especially enthused about a QT Marshall angle if that's going to get a lot of oxygen. But the stuff leading up to that was pretty good. And we got lots of overhead cam as well, so that was fun.
There you go. We've got a Young Bucks interview. Basically, the Young Bucks are saying, oh, yeah, you beat me in singles, but you won't as a tag team. And then Don Callis interrupts, and he's like, I don't know, you guys aren't the same guys that I saw in Japan. I didn't like any of this.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I didn't, because it was, to me, boring because there's nothing new here. If he wants to challenge to a tag team, that's one thing. You know, that at least is something. But this whole bit about Don Callis saying just the shit he's been saying, you know, it's not like he's saying anything new. I don't know, it just thumbs it down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, right?
I understand because
I feel like you're lashing out because your joke didn't land.
Actually, this is before I even told the joke. So
there you go. Yeah. I get it because a lot of the stuff is real inside baseball. There was a memo that went around the WWE saying no more, do not slap leg when kicking. It's a thing that many wrestlers do, that cracking sound when you see a super kick or, some big kick that hits somebody in the head.
Yeah.
That's them slapping their leg for effect.
Oh my God. I never knew that. And I was like, how the fuck do these people still have brains?
I'm a huge fan of it because
I
first saw it when Yoshihiro Tajiri was doing that in the late 90s. And I was like, I was astonished. And then I figured out what was going on. And I was still astonished because he's so good at it. You never saw him, do that.
Yeah.
You never saw his hand hit his leg. And that's the problem is that it's gotten so lax now that a lot of people just sort of you see them wind up and then smack their thigh as they do the thing.
Sometimes it's so egregious that the slap is actually at someone's chest or face, without even going along with a kick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a thing that Vince apparently got super worked up about. And I think it's it's pure bullshit.
And AEW was very, very taken with the story because they also did the something about this in Being the Elite.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense because it is commonly seen as an indie move. So yeah, that was the a joke for the Smarks, and I laughed. So,
I don't remember them saying anything about that in this interview.
That's the shirt that he gave them. He unrolled it and it said, "Do not slap leg when kicking."
Oh.
So yeah, he didn't say it out loud, but it was a visual gag. And I love Don Callis, so I'm thumbing this thing up because this was all great for me.
Yeah, that was how I felt about it. Don Callis, aka Uncle Creepy. I don't know that I didn't think he did anything like so new, but he is almost better even than Kenny Omega sometimes at being like a total asshole to people like the Young Bucks. And so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, they're great 1-2 punch.
Then we've got Jade versus Danny Jordan. Jade had a great look, great intro. There's lots of trash talk at the top of the match as well as throughout the match. So that's kind of fun. You know, she's getting into the whole vibe of being a heel and stuff. Not that she hasn't before.
Now, Teresa, you've heard of manhandled, but this was an example of woman handling, as we learned from commentary.
Oh, geez. Who said that? I did not
hear that.
Yeah,
I didn't hear that either.
I forget. I wrote it down and I didn't write down who said it.
Yeah, it could have been anybody.
It's hard to be sure. I want to say it's JR, but that could be an unfair accusation.
Later on, when it was Britt and Thunder Rosa, he's like, "You know, these ladies can't really call them ladies right now." I'm like, "You fucking asshole! God damn it! That's why ladies wrestling. That's why women's wrestling can't go anywhere because of that kind of attitude." You fucking
internalized misogyny. That's you hate to see it.
Well, I hate to see it.
But yeah. So, anyways. There's a crazy German suplex that looked almost haphazard or maybe too strong because Danny almost flew out of the ring, it looked like. And so there's some learning curves there. Maybe Jade is either she got too excited or too nervous, or she's too strong for her own good and just like overdid it. But
I mean, there's no such thing as being too strong. There's not having enough control. Because, yeah. You know, this is professional wrestling and, you know, it's.
So, yeah, that may be the issue that there wasn't as much. Because I've never seen someone do a suplex where someone skids in the ring. You know what I mean? Like, they tend to drop kind of right where they're dropped. Anyways, but it still did the trick as far as like selling these really super slam moves and stuff, so I enjoyed it. And then after Jade won, she taunted Red Velvet in the crowd after their match. That's also fun, you know, because that's probably going to be an ongoing thing and whatever. Thumbs up.
Yeah, for me too. I thought this was like Jade is looking better and better to me. The more she is in the ring, able to do some like a good moves and you know she's perhaps not talking quite as much this and I was like I was thinking something that is nice is that in AEW you don't get the comical squash victim quite so much because I'm like, oh, Danny Jordan, I've heard of her, she's a real wrestler, and when Jade beats her I'm like that doesn't mean nothing. That's something.
That's fair. Although she did also just lose to Red Velvet last night on Dark. So
she did.
Yeah, it's not going well for her. I just noticed it in passing.
Jade or Danny Jordan?
Danny Jordan.
Oh, okay.
Like in the Dark ticker, I was like, oh wow, she lost two nights in a row too.
Well, if you, I think if you lose one, you're at a severe risk of losing another right after it because you haven't had the time to both recuperate and readjust strategy and tactics.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll buy that. Yeah, I barely gave it a middle. I just think her work is she's still real green, real sloppy in the ring. And like, we know where that leads. A real strong woman who's real sloppy in the ring is a friggin' Nia Jax.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see that happening. I think, Jade will be really good at some point, but you know, kind of like with Wardlow, like they're protecting Wardlow. They're giving him time to get better. Like do that with Jade. Like have her be someone's valet and, you know, like a, kind of like a rebel with a Brit, you know, just have her like beat somebody up, you know, do like one big power move, over in the ringside to help somebody win. But if just putting her out like that, it doesn't look great. I don't think that's me.
Okay.
Hmm.
So moving right along, we've got,
what was yours? I didn't thumb it.
Oh, Teresa thumbed it up.
Oh, you thumbed it up. Okay. I upped it as well.
So MJF, Tully, FTR, Sean Spears, and Wardlow come out.
In my notes, I put the Four Horsemen promo because they should be called the Four Horsemen. You have to sort of like pretend like Wardlow isn't there for it to be four because there's five of them. But even still.
Or maybe Tully isn't there.
I mean, Tully definitely, like he should not be in the ring. And so like we can just
Yeah, I guess it would be Tully and Wardlow would have to leave. Well, I don't like the idea of the Four Horsemen anyway, so whatever.
There have been more than enough horsemen, horsewomen, horse children, horses.
There's been horsing around. Anyways, Tully started on the mic. I don't like him on the mic. He's fine.
He's fine.
But then MJF got on the mic. Thank God. And he's like, I guess I'm the Judas. And I laughed. anyways, he's like, I pretended to like you and your ha-ha comedy bullshit. Talking about Chris Jericho. And he talked every single one of these guys up one by one, and it was great. Yep. You know, he's so good at that and really sold Sean Spears in a way that like no one else has been able to do yet.
My God,
you know,
the fact that you remember his name now
is a
testament to how amazing MJF is on the mic.
I'm telling you, I know. Blurry McBlurface is something I would have called him because he looks like just blank white man. You know, like it could be anyone. But yeah, his name's Sean Spears. And the way he talks about Wardlow is so funny because he's like, he's the fiercest you've ever seen in wrestling ever. And it's like, that's funny because we really haven't seen him in a long time. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, to hear everybody in the announce booth tell it, like he will be world champion for 30 years with nonstop. They just, oh my gosh, the amount of gushing they do for the amount of ring work he has shown is.
He's going
to
be
funny.
Quad champ, easy.
And then MJF's like, I've got 25 plus years left. I'll be the GOAT, you know, I'll be the greatest of all time. And of course he finishes with, I'm better than you and you know it. And they revealed their name. They're now called the Pinnacle.
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm.
I say
not a fan.
I don't like the name, but I'm interested to see what happens.
The thing that is my favorite about all of this is that for the past several months he's gotten to do that bullshit comedy. Mm-hmm. He can do comedy.
Yeah.
And they let him do comedy, and you know, he got over in a completely different way. Now this is him saying, no more comedy, I'm just going to be a huge asshole heel.
Yeah.
And we'll get to see that for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, he gets to do all of the stuff that he's good at, and he's good at so goddamn many things.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just fantastic, and we get to transition to a new MJF that I'm super super excited to see.
The question is how many of the 25 years he has left are going to be straight heel, and how many are going to break down with the rest of them.
I mean, like Cena only had one speed on him. You know what? Rocky could mix it up, and that's good. Steve Austin, people did not like his comedy stuff. I thought he was hilarious when he was working with Kurt Angle. He just did some just marvelous stuff that didn't get over, which is a real shame. But I think MJF will be like Jericho. He'll be able to move back and forth because Jericho's had plenty of long runs as just like a real tough guy, you know, fighter. So like, yeah. He's got versatility.
He'll do great at whatever. Yep, pinnacle is a weird word and a weird name.
HMS Pinnacle.
The pinnacle.
So someone has their thesaurus out.
Basically.
I'm disappointed that they didn't go with inner circle, because I think that would have been the way
innermost.
Oh man.
Outermost, because they're the outermost square. Those are the complete opposite, polar opposite.
Oh man.
Anyway.
Swirling jetty.
You thumbs this up, right, Calder?
Yes.
All right. So then we've got another interesting match. Big Money Matt Hardy, Private Party, mm-hmm. Butcher and the Blade, this new group, versus Jurassic Park and Bear Country.
You said it too. You said Jurassic Park too.
Oops, I did, didn't I? And I have it written down, Jurassic Express. I'm not even reading it right.
What has happened to all of us?
You know, the lost world.
It's been a fucked up week. We can say it.
It's been hard times.
All right. So there was a fun little Matt promo, you know, basically saying that what binds all of them is just money. They all like money. So whatever. It turns into a melee right away, but then Jurassic Express gets it under control. They throw Marco Stunt, and he almost misses the guys on the ground and almost goes out into the crowd. I mean, the only note, he was caught.
The only note I took about this match was that, oh my God, Bear Country almost killed Marco.
You know what I mean? They fucking...
I don't think you have to worry about anything happening to Marco, because it's, you know, it's like if a dry like tree leaf like leapt off the top rope. It, like, how could it possibly come down with lethal impact?
Well, like, I would ask you, because
if he landed on his face,
it's possible you're about the same weight as Marco Stunt is. If someone threw you out of a ring and you landed on the ground some 10 feet below, how would you feel?
Well, I'd be offended.
Okay, fair enough.
Luchasaurus has a great run of beating ass and showing his moves.
Oh man,
which was a lot of fun. Always great to see. Go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry. To elaborate on how great that was, especially like just like the subsection of it that was him repeatedly knocking down Private Party.
It was
a great sequence.
There was a weird thing where Bear Country and Jurassic Express are like arguing or fighting in the corner. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not totally clear what's going on. Obviously, they're not a cohesive team. But then it's Private Party versus Marco Stunt. So basically, the Jurassic Express is busy with Bear Country fighting, and so Private Party is just beating the shit out of Marco Stunt. And then Matt asks if he can get tagged in so he can hog the win, and of course he does. Then there's more Jurassic Express and Bear Country fights off sides. It was just a little weird, you know? I mean, I was kind of excited to see Bear Country because I haven't been able to see much of them. What I saw wasn't a lot, wasn't great, but I have my fingers crossed for things in the future and for things to get better. But, it looks like Jurassic Express might have a fight with Bear Country at some point since they blew it. Anyways, I thumbs it up though.
Yeah.
This was all perfectly acceptable, and I'm, I'm loving, of course, Butcher and Blade.
Yes.
Getting to do stuff and being in. I think this will be a real good matchup for them to be in this group. Mm-hmm. Jurassic Park and Bear Country. I do want to see them fight. Did I say Jurassic Park again?
You did.
I feel like I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You know what?
Guys.
The dino and the dinosaur and his boy is what I'll call him.
For. Yeah. Yeah. Billy and the Clonosaurus. You know,
these matches are just really, they really test your ability to remember and repeat information because, you know, when there are like several individual entities on either side where you can't be like this group against that group, you have to like put it together like custom pizzas that have like half of this and half of that and then a half that is overlapping with both of those, you know, like, oh my god. Yeah. And I think that's what the arguing outside the ring was about, like, who's with us? Who even are we?
Are we shooting it? I'm not sure.
They'll never answer that question.
Dinosaurs mad at bears? Are they their natural?
Are you supposed to be over here or are you supposed to be over there?
This is like the Kong versus Godzilla match. Bear Country versus Jurassic Express.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, there sure was a lot of meat in this match. No, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
I thumbsed it up. Oh, wait, did we thumb it? Did we all thumb it?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I did as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so now I'm going to say three things. And you're going to know exactly what I think of it and where probably unanimous thumbs are. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say Moxley, Eddie Kingston, promo.
Ooh.
That's all you need to know. It was fucking hilarious. It was absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. It was so goddamn perfect.
I had to look
it's
up.
It's almost annoying.
Mox's shirt because it said Violent Gentleman. And I was like, if that is the name of their tag team, I can just die right now, a happy man. Apparently, a former hockey player started a clothing line called Violent Gentleman Hockey Club.
Cool.
And so it's just a bunch of shirts with like that, you know, name and varying kinds of logos. But please, please call yourself the Violent Gentleman.
That would be awesome. Would
fill me with so much joy.
Yeah, they need a name.
I thumbsed it up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We started talking about calling him Forky from Toy Story. That popped me.
The specifics in this were very funny. We were hearing Moxley was doing this hick accent. We were hearing about Forky, Chad Too Bad, 50 Cent, and Tupac.
I looked up Chad Too Bad, and it is indeed one of the former wrestling monikers of.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But the specifics to me, the thing that is overriding that would have made anything really work so well is the dynamic that we're getting between them.
Yeah.
And I think it's satisfying both because of the short term history that is between them that we've seen on Dynamite and the long term history that is like there is this difference about how real life gets mined. Like where like elsewhere we've seen like real life stuff kind of get cravenly exploited in a way that isn't as satisfying as this, where it's more of harnessing the power of a relationship. Like there's something very different about what we get out of these two guys. Like there's this relaxed, effortless, you know, like semi or fully improvised like energy to it. That is just a lot of fun. This was pretty cool.
Then we've got a Christian Cage interview. He's saying he is the workhorse of wrestling and he wants Kenny's belt. Kenny, you're on borrowed time. He's like, I'm here to cement my legacy. I middled it because he was trying to put himself over. Like, y'all don't understand. You're disappointed I'm here, but I'm so good. I don't know. It just didn't come across the way I think he was hoping it would. And, you know, it's cool. Like, I'm sure I'll enjoy seeing him in the ring, but I just middled the promo.
That's fair. Being that I'm a longtime fan, this is My favorite is goofy fun Christian. And this is, you know, like I'm a grizzled veteran Christian, which is fine. And I think he does a decent enough job at it. I did thumb it up. And you know, we'll see. We'll see. For someone who has never seen him before, this guy is not that impressive, but then also, you know, I think Sting's the same way. So I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's a middle for me too, because it was definitely fine. And I think that I believe something I'll enjoy is coming of it, but I also don't have a lot to go on.
Okay. And then we've got the Moxley Kingston fight versus the Good Brothers. It starts with the Good Brothers attacking Kingston the second he comes out of the little tunnel. And they fight outside of the ring for a while. And then Moxley came out, but then was taken out pretty early. And so Kingston got his ass beat. Moxley, by the way, was in this crazy bandaged like arm and almost comically bandaged like chest and shoulder to sell, you know, how badly he got hurt and burned in the the death match, you know. So, you know, they're really selling the fact that he's fighting, but he's fighting as like half a man, you know, he's really not on his game. So Kingston's getting his ass beat. Then Moxley finally got up and Moxley was waiting for the tag. And I was like, why does he just run in? Like, there are no rules anymore. Nobody ever gives a shit in these matches. But anyways, he does get the tag and Moxley gets the pin on Gallows and Anderson. But anyways, they just keep beating him up. And then Kenny comes out with a chair and that was one of the greatest intros.
Oh boy, was it?
Just almost dancing out with his chair. And he sits down on the chair. I thought he was going to like hit Moxley, but he sits down. And then Eddie flies at him and knocks him out and then, or down, I should say. Then they beat up Eddie and put his leg in the chair and like hurt his leg. And then they put Moxley's head and neck in the chair, and it looks like – I was like, oh, well, that's just going to fucking kill him. Boy. What are they doing?
if you can't be killed by a bomb.
But then the Young Bucks stop it, and then they have this little gun club signal standoff. Like, come on, do the signal, do the signal. And then Omega pushes them because they won't. And then Omega and the Bucks kind of have a moment. And then Moxley comes after everyone with the chair and they all run away. So it's like these three, again, a match with three different moments that's telling different stories. We've got Moxley and Kingston versus the Good Brothers. We've got Kenny Omega and Moxley with Eddie trying to save him again. And then we've got the Young Bucks and the Gun Club. You know, so it's this whole thing. But Omega's super pissed at the Bucks right now, so we'll see what happens. I thumbs the whole thing up.
Mm-hmm.
I middled it.
Wow.
The match was a middle, and then Kenny came out. I'm like, oh, okay, now we're going to get started. This was kind of like that previous match. Like, the match was just kind of there so that we could get to the storytelling afterwards. But then the whole thing just kind of like, okay, I get it, right? The Young Bucks are, you know, kind of split it, but we want to bring them back in, but they don't do it, and they do the too sweet, and they refuse, and they walk away, and the whole thing just really left me underwhelmed. I really wanted more, and there wasn't a whole lot of advancement here. It was just a lot of kind of stuff that I'd seen before, so... as much as I love every single person involved in this, the whole thing just fell flat for me.
Okay.
I liked it. I enjoyed like a lot of what we got in the match, and then Kenny Omega's entrance, I agree, was pretty incredible. It was a real Michael Madsen in Reservoir Dogs
yes. kind
of menace, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was like.
And then, I don't know, so I guess some of the melee was fine, but, like, the prolonged absurdity of the hand sign like standoff was fun for me. Because it was like there's something like the, you know, these are legally binding hand signs. If you do one, that is joining.
Yeah.
It is too sweet. Just so you know, it's called too sweet. Okay. It's a little wolf. You make it with the your middle and ring finger and your thumb. It's a little wolf with little ears.
Yeah.
The only hand sign I honor is the church full of people.
Yeah.
I do the steeple. All right. So then we've got Shivani. I don't know why he always has to do this. Introducing Sting and Darby. But anyways. Basically, Darby's saying, like, I've only defended this belt 3 times. That's some bullshit. I want to defend it every week. But, and he says he wants to start by paying tribute to the greatest TNT champ ever. And the crowd starts chanting, Cody, Cody. But Darby says,
no, so they're saying Brody.
Well, it sounded like they were saying Cody. And then Darby says, if Dark Order, if you want it, come and get it. Because that, I think, to me, that was an interesting turn. Because Cody obviously had it the longest. So you could argue that he was the greatest TNT champ. But then, you know, Brody is everyone's favorite, of course. And he should have had it much longer. Yeah. But anyways, so I thought they were saying Cody, and that was a fun little turn.
That's what I thought they were saying as well, actually.
Yeah. So you know what? I think they were, and I think you're just a bitter old lemon.
Well, yes. No, these two things can be mutually exclusive.
A fresh lemon, but a lemon that is, in addition to being sour by its very nature, it is even rotted beyond that.
Here's the thing. The people around the ring, the ones that are mic'd, are wrestlers. So they will be told, like, you're going to chant a certain thing at a certain time. And because we're talking about Brody, obviously, because we're doing the Dark Order thing.
Yeah, but we didn't know it was the Dark Order until Darby says this.
Yeah.
So they were chanting Cody prior to him saying that. No. Is my point.
We can go. Yeah. All right. I'm going to.
Anyways.
No, keep going. I'm going to.
Someone else should watch this. We should have like a total different group watching and let us know. Were they saying Cody or were they saying Brody?
We need a red team, blue team, like siloed, like watching experience.
You know, but I gave it a thumbs up only because of. Oh wait! Hold on! I haven't gotten. This is thing that has several bits. Sorry,
halfway through.
My second paper. Okay. So then Lance Archer interrupts and he says some stuff, but the best was when he said. He says, why does Shivani interview Sting every week? And I was like, I agree. Why? Then Team Taz comes in and basically Cage is like, I want to talk this time and I want to talk to Sting. And he says, you've stuck your nose in our business. And after all these crazy fights, I got to say, I respect you and you're an icon. And then Team Taz hilariously erupts in just anger and they're pissed at Cage for this and Cage walks off and I'm like, oh, what's gonna happen to Team Taz? No, please stay together. So I give this whole thing, as weird and bumpy as some bits were, a thumbs up.
It was pretty good for me. It included one of those like elevations of a very mild insult into like a super strong one by virtue of it being in a wrestling show, when Darby is called a weenie, and this is just unforgivable. Unforgivable.
Put on your hot dog bun because you're a weenie. First he's like, get your bun back on, and I was like, what does he mean, bun?
I can't believe that the mighty Jake the Snake Roberts, innovator of the DDT, master of heel psychology, is reduced to calling someone a weenie that needs to get into a hot dog bun. So disappointing.
Well, I mean, without the get into a hot dog bun, you have nothing. But with it,
you still have nothing.
you have arguably a sandwich.
Yeah, technically.
A sandwich is just a sandwich, but a manwich is a meal. Ooh. That is a marketing slogan that I did not realize was still in my head until just this moment.
Well, wow. A hot dog could be a meal depending on what city you're in, because a Chicago dog is arguably a meal.
Oh, God. Here we go with the Chicago hot dogs again. Man,
they're good. Okay.
Okay.
Although I'm someone who likes putting mustard on hot dogs, and apparently that's like a terrible thing. Whatever.
It's fine. It is. It's fine.
I love it. I put everything on a hot dog. Are you kidding me? Anything and everything.
I really only ever want ketchup on hamburgers or hot dogs.
Hey, guys, write us a letter in your handwriting and put a stamp on it and send it to Twitter.
Handwriting.
Let us know. It only takes two stamps to get it to Twitter, so send it in. Hmm. Let us know. What do you put on hot dogs?
And do you need them to get in a bun or not get in a bun?
Yeah. Or do you do lettuce? Are you one of those people that's anti-bun?
What is that called? Protein style?
You know, when I was a little girl, this babysitter said, "Do you want me to put your hair in a bun?" I was really, really little. And I was like, yeah. I didn't know what a bun was. And in my mind, I thought my hair would look like a hot dog. And then when it didn't, I was sad.
But I
tried not to let her know I was sad.
The most hilarious sadness ever. I was definitely enjoying Cage's breaking from the group because it was the thing Chan is always talking about actually building up someone who you're against, especially after they beat you. But also it was just in and of itself extremely funny to watch Starks aggrieved by.
Yes,
that was so funny.
That's what sets him apart. That's the mark of a thing that my mother told me when I was a child, was that a really great actor, you will notice them in the background. And mm-hmm. in retrospect, that's terrible advice. Nobody hires extras to be seen, for God's sakes. However, the message stuck that a really great performer is someone who is always in it and does little things that if you're paying attention, you'll notice and be like, oh my God, that is amazing. And mm-hmm. Ricky Starks does that every goddamn night. It's so mm-hmm. great.
Oh boy.
So true.
It was pretty
great. Did we all thumb this?
We did not.
It's enough for me.
This is one of a few segments where I could not decide whether to go middle or up. Because all of the stuff, I didn't really care about Darby's thing. I didn't care about Lance Archer's thing. Team Taz came in, and I'm generally just going to give it a thumbs up any old time. But because there was so much other mishigas happening, I was like, I don't know about this. Mm-hmm. However, I will explain later why this segment and others to follow are getting an up from me.
Okay.
I would say it's provisional, but that's not quite what I mean. I'll explain it in a minute. Okay. First off, though.
Sounds like Cody to me.
If you watch the video, you will see them mouthing bruh, not ka.
Well, ka to you. Kidding, kidding.
What is that? You don't have to kid. I don't know what that means. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know either.
I mean,
time decide.
It's one way or the other. It's undeniable. Ka to you.
Whatever. So maybe it was funny, but
if we're in a t-shirt generating phase, along with thumb your heart, cut to you.
Katsuyu could be one. No, but you know what? Honestly, it would have been a more interesting thing if they had it to be a surprise as opposed to that. But it's okay. Either way, it's great because Brody Lee was everyone's favorite.
Because the Dark Order is going to get a shot at that title.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, and we get to find out later and we'll talk about it. But the next bit is a Scorpio Sky promo. And I have to say, this was so great. Sidebar, he used to wrestle, or maybe he still does, but obviously this year it didn't happen, in Lucha Vavoom.
Scorpio Sky?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that. Mask, and he used to do Lucha Vavoom. So that was really cool. And I didn't realize that until Lucha, they posted something about Scorpio Sky getting the, the ring the other day, winning the ladder match. Nice. And I was like, oh my God, I never would have known because, you know, when someone's in a mask and then go by a different name, you don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So he was saying in his promo, nice guys finish last, but no more. I'm a wrestling savant. And if I got to hurt people to win, then so be it. So I was like, this is great. It's more of what he's good at. He's a great talker. I'm excited to see what happens with his career, how far this goes, because I'm loving what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing. So thumbs up.
Here's another one that I possibly middle, possibly up, because I like where they're going. I love the booking of this. I love him in the ring. I'm not connecting quite the same way with his promos. They're fine, but, I don't get a lot of fire out of them. So, this was close to a middle, but as mentioned, I will let you know, later on why I'm giving this an up.
Okay.
I did middle it. It was definitely okay. But it didn't have what I felt like I was getting from Scorpio Sky on commentary. And obviously, like, it's not like what he does in the ring. So I don't know. It was middle.
Then we got Rey Phoenix. Excuse me. Rey Phoenix versus Angelico.
I was worried that you were going to start pronouncing it Refinix.
Oh my God, no.
I will not excuse you.
This was a great pairing, these two together. It's a great match. Man, I don't even know what to say about it. It was just really great. It's all the things that you love from both of these performers. They just work really well off each other. Rey got the win. I thumbs it up.
The only note I took of this thing was, I want more of this, a lot more.
Yeah.
Both of them are, I love both of them to begin with. And this was a really different style of match. And I thought it was fantastic and I loved it. I'm so happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great. Thumbs up as well.
We've got a Miro interview. He was asked about a rematch. Miro's like, I moved on. And then Kip Sabian's like, well, I haven't. By the way, you hurt my wife, even if it was an accident. And then Miro's like, well, when that bell rings, I don't care about you or your wife. I'm just going to win. Kip's like, I want you to win. And he's like, oh, Miro's like, okay, well, we're still friends. And then they're like, so are you going to accept the challenge? And Kip's like, yeah, we accept it. It's so weird. I didn't know.
Say what you will.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead. You go.
I was just going to say, I didn't know where to thumb it, but I thumbs it up.
What I was going to say was, like, I guess say what you will about Alex Marvez, but he is fearless about approaching anyone for an interview, no matter what the circumstances are, because, like going near Miro, mid workout is just not what I would do. Like that just seems like the worst, like, conceivable time, like maybe second to when he's in a match, like at that moment, like that would be the actual worst time.
I'll say this. I don't know if you're paying attention to the kind of pull-up he was doing, but he was basically grabbing a hold of the frame of the weightlifting thing. And so his hands were real, his fingers were like really far apart. And he just had this like really open grip that has to be one of the hardest things imaginable to do, because it looks like he was basically holding himself by his fingertips and doing a pull up. So I would argue that that is something he did to show off, and it was super hard. And so he very much wanted Marvez to ask him a question so he could stop doing that as soon as possible.
Probably true.
That was the safest place for Marvez to be at any time. I'm actually giving Amiro Promo a thumbs up for once.
Wow.
I do like Angry Miro. I'm not the hugest fan of Comedy Miro. And then, yeah, just stuff like the worst thing is having your wife at ringside. Like, yeah, let's throw a couple more jabs up north. That's fine with me. yeah, happy about it.
Yeah, it was great.
Then we've got, oh, wait. Oh, yeah, you thumbed it. You thumbed it, Calder?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure. Sorry. Okay, so then we have Marvez with the dark.
I'm the thumb master. I will let you know if there are thumbs missing.
Okay.
The thumb master.
So Marvez is backstage with the Dark Order and is saying, basically, they want to know who is going to accept the challenge of Darby Allin. And Negative One comes out and he's like, I accept the challenge. And they're like, maybe in like 10 years, buddy, you're only 9. It was just so cute. And then they're like, how about Johnny Meat something?
Johnny like, Hunky, the Meat Man.
They're like, how about Johnny Meat Man? And he's like, ooh, Johnny Hunky, yeah. So basically he accepts. They all had green shirts on. It was cute. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yep. Silly fun. Thumbs up.
And this is a good moment to note that Negative One had a winning turn on commentary earlier this week on Dark. So like, I don't know, he's doing fun stuff. It's been fun.
And reading that post from his mom was really great to see, too, because she's saying, like, yeah, there's some people saying that, like, AEW is exploiting him or whatever. But, like, no, he's in this place and everybody's accepting and loving and, like, helping him get through, you know, this horrible shit of having his dad die. And also, like, this is a privilege for him. So it's not like he's getting a big head about it. It's not like he's skipping school to do it. Like, he has to maintain his grades, otherwise he doesn't get to do this thing. So like, it feels like everybody's got a real good head on their shoulders. He is having fun. And I honestly think that this thing that he's doing where he's like a little bit, you know, sillier and less like, you know, like I'm the ringmaster, puppet master, pulling the strings kind of thing is a great place for him to be. Just like a weird little Marco stunt mascot.
Yeah.
But because the whole thing is silly fun, like it's perfect.
Yeah, it really goes along with where John Silver would be taking them anyway, like totally independent.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we get a little clip backstage, MJF taking the Inner Circle's dressing room, changing the Inner Circle sign with a pinnacle sign. So, I don't know if we want to thumb that or if that's just like a throwaway moment we can mention.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just move on. Okay. So now we got the match of the night. It's the
lights out
match with Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker. Basically, nothing disqualifies.
And I want to just like really get on the same page about what the legality and insurance consequences are of turning off the lights and then turning them back on.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Because this is a non-sanctioned match. So neither a win or a loss will count towards their overall, you know, scores. What are they called? Mm-hmm. Are they called scores or are they called
rankings?
Rankings. But you know, if someone is killed, like as far as like insurance consequences go, or manslaughter charges or something of the like. Like, what do we, like, what are we get, what are we able to get around here by doing it as a lights out match is my question.
I still don't understand how this is different from a no DQ match. Other than they flick the lights.
Yeah, it's basically because there are no disqualifiers, they say.
Mm-hmm. No.
You know, a fall anywhere counts.
Mm-hmm. So it's falls count anywhere match.
And
got it.
In a no DQ match. There's no match, time
restriction either.
Like if you go over, then that gets taken out of the Mummy 3
Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Dragon Emperor. Oh, I didn't have it. I didn't have it. I did not have it at all. In a no DQ match, no matter how hurt you get, no ice cream.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, that makes sense then.
So this is a really incredible match. There was chairs galore, tables. Thunder Rosa's head got opened up by getting her head smacked down the stairs.
My note at this point was Rosa's bleeding. Love it, but will Britt blade? And the answer was very much
a resounding yes.
Oh my goodness!
She bled like a motherfucker.
I think Ooh. it was an exploding like razor blade match.
There was a suplex off the top. There's like a pile of chairs in the middle of the ring, yeah. And they did a suplex off the top rope onto the chairs. Holy shit!
That was the first time where I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That looked messy.
What I liked about this match is they're basically saying like, oh, you don't like women's wrestling because you don't think they can do the same thing that men's wrestling does. Well, let's just show you all these things. They brought out ladders. They did ladder shit, tables, chairs. The audience was chanting AC/DC's little thunder. Thunder. And I thought that was really cool because that's just fucking great whenever you can come up with something fun to chant for somebody. But
knowing who they were chanting it for, but nonetheless.
So Thunder Rosa is really kicking ass, and then suddenly Britt gets the upper hand and she pours a shitload of tacks onto the floor.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Rebel.
What was I posting in our chat?
I don't know.
Because there was the running commentary of me realizing when she pulled out the bag. I mean, I know what that bag is.
I didn't.
That bag terrifies me more than any table or chair or weapon, kendo sticks, man. When I see that black bag, I'm like, oh God, this is going to be horrible.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I wrote no in all caps and then no again. Then, oh God. And there was a few minutes later before I had to type, it's not over, oh God, again, because after the first thumbtack spot, I thought we were done. I was like, oh my, that is.
So there was some back and forth, but finally it was Britt that got slammed onto the tacks.
Powerbombed. That is no joke.
And then Britt tries to get the lockjaw on Thunder Rosa, but then they roll back into the thumbtacks, and so she gets
Rosa is on her stomach,
yeah,
rolling in thumbtacks,
yeah. So yeah, and Britt is rolling, you know, still again in the thumbtacks again. Ugh. It was fucking insane. Rebel went through a table.
Yeah,
Rosa ends up pile driving Britt through a table off the ring. I mean, it was insane. Thunder Rosa wins. And here's where I got super pissed is at the end, they're like, oh, and she breaks down and cries. Oh, of course, because after all that, of course you would cry. She didn't fucking cry. She had like pain face, you know, that like, I just got my fucking ass ripped face. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She wasn't crying. And I was like, why would they fucking say that? Because, again, it's just another thing they put on a woman's match that they don't put on a man's match. Mm-hmm. You know, when a man is writhing in pain, they don't say, oh, he's crying, of course. Oh, he dealt with so much tonight. You know what I mean? It's like, no, You're like, oh, he looks like he's in pain. Anyway.
Yep.
I thumbs it up.
Oh, did you? It's a really interesting aspect of a match where the momentum shifts like are played out in the relative blood amounts that were on the competitors' faces as much as anything that else that that happened, because Rosa was beat up real bad real early, and then Britt was like overtook her, and it was, oh man, it was, and I was, it just made me wonder about what the short list of bloodiest women's matches would be, what it would look like, because I wouldn't have a sense of what goes there, but like this was pretty wild.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot in the I'll say mainstream US. I'm sure there's plenty of CZW stuff where there's a lot of blood from women, and I'm sure you go over to Japan, FMW has probably got hordes of those kinds of matches. But this one, I mean, even still, really far up there. There's that one shot that was probably going to make it in some promos forever now of Britt Baker, fucking Crimson Mask. Entire face just covered in blood and just like eyes open, just like grinning. And
oh man,
like that was amazing. And I would call this a match of the year contender for sure.
It was really really good. The chair stuff alone, the ladder stuff. And I'll tell you something I appreciate that is a subtle detail in all of this. The Falls Count Anywhere match that still stays around the ring and doesn't venture out into the concourse and onto the football field and everywhere else. Because I'm like, well, okay, logically, they don't all have to go there. Yes, they can. But
yeah, I figured we'd get more of what we did get. I mean, we did go in there a little bit, and then there was chair action out there. But, you know, it was just still super tight. And I wonder if that's also, I mean, it can't be the COVID stuff, because they could have gone into, you know, any of the millions of other places we've already seen this year inside the facility. Usually it would be probably further out into the crowd. But I'm guessing they just don't do that right now because of COVID and the fact that they have an audience now. So,
well, I'm glad they did what they did, because to do anything else would have been distracting from what we were getting to see. The deathmatch stuff, I think was nice. So like, I'm not troubled by that. Like I think that's, you know, something cool that we got to have. But if they were to do all the far ranging stuff, that I would have been a little upset that we weren't getting to see just them do their thing. Because, mm-hmm. That was supposed to be the thing. Like, this is a big deal match. And, like, I don't know. We've seen them, you know, wrestle around an ice machine before. Like that novelty is not needed here.
Mm-hmm. You get color in a match to raise the stakes, to give intensity to a match. And so, like, we're focused in this match on like watching these women bleed in much the same way that we're watching, you know, Omega and Moxley bleed. So like, yeah, that is how you make this match have meaning and value. And they just played that to a T.
Yeah.
They did such a good job of this that I was disappointed that I did not have more thumbs to give for this match. Which is why when I look back and realize that I had some like middle thumbs that I wasn't sure about earlier in the show, I was like, you know what? All of those in between thumbs are going to be ups, because how good this match was.
Yeah.
Generosity.
It was spectacular. These two women are great, and
it was great.
They did a great job.
I'm so glad that I'm obviously glad Britt would have a good match. I'm especially glad that Thunder Rosa would have one, because, you know, whatever her future is, like, my assumption is that the NWA women are going to go away and not come back much. And, you know, this has been a great showcase for people like Rosa So to get to do that match with that many eyes is really great for her.
Yeah.
Yep.
So where are we at?
We have what I believe is a tie for best score ever, 92%.
Holy 92. Shit.
92. Wow.
Wow.
It was a real good episode. Definitely must watch.
Yes.
So much good stuff in here.
Yeah, man. Good stuffs.
Oh, yeah. Before we wrap it up, don't we have a question to answer, do we not?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Okay, so the question was, oh, shoot, we should have done this at the top. Oh, well. The question was, if TNT were to remake Face Off and cast an AEW wrestler, who would we cast as the two people in Face Off? Now, the original two are John Travolta and Nick Cage. So I was thinking, no, you guys go first. Sorry, you guys go first.
I know what I'm doing. I'm picking Hangman Adam Page and John Silver, and they're gonna switch bodies, and Adam Page is trying to infiltrate the Dark Order, and he's got to be Johnny Hungy, and Johnny Hungy is suddenly in the body of of this person he's always wanted to be, and so now he gets to live the life of Adam Page. And I mean, I guess this is more of a 13 going on 30. A Freaky Friday premise than Face Off. But I mean, Face Off is just Freaky Friday with guns, right? Am I not?
With surgery.
And doves.
Yeah, with guns and surgery. And I mean, that's just John Woo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I assume we're doing a fairly faithful adaptation of Face Off.
So we're your people.
I am going to I'll not do the top of my list because I don't like it feels more obvious than I would like. So I'm gonna do Ricky Starks and Hikaru Shida.
Oh,
I see. Because, what's the premise then?
Well, it's Face Off. It's the traditional Face Off that we
who's
grew
the bad
up
guy.
With. Well, Ricky Starks is the bad guy, and Hikaru Shida. I was like, who? Like, and it was hard because like there were different heels that I thought would really work, and it was not as easy like picking like who I thought would be the best like faces. Because I was like, well, who is the absolute most painful good guy? And so there were a few people that I thought of. Hangman was definitely one of them, except he's, you know, closer to being like a Lethal Weapon, Mel Gibson, because he's like a Death Wishy guy. So I was like, Hikaru Shida is extremely square. Like that is your FBI agent in AEW.
Yeah. She's a narc for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't remember much of the movie other than Nicolas Cage and John Travolta changed faces a couple times. That's what I took away from the movie years ago. And that's what
it is. That's the case.
And the moral is to be happy with the face that you have.
Yeah,
and to not,
the face isn't greener on the other side.
Yeah.
That is anyway. Definitely the moral that you should take away from that movie.
But can you imagine? Anyways, so like, I was just thinking of who is like John Travolta and who is like Nicolas Cage. And John Travolta, the first thing that came to mind was MJF, you know, charming, whatever, could be a good guy or bad guy, you know. And then the Nicolas Cage position, though, was very hard to figure out because I was like, I don't know, is this an Eddie Kingston? Is this a Johnny Hungy? Which that's his name now for forever. I can't even remember if he had a different name.
I literally said it 2 minutes ago.
Well, anyway, Silver, right? Whatever. So, you know, I couldn't figure it out. So, and I was like, or is it just like Moxley? You know, maybe he's just a little gnarled up. I don't know. I had a hard time figuring out who at AEW is like Nicolas Cage.
Interesting.
In everything that I know of Nicolas Cage today as a person. You know what I mean? Like all the things that come to mind when you think of Nicolas Cage.
What do you know?
You know, there's like so many things.
I mean, I feel like if you had to go that route and who is the most Nicolas Cage like of any of the rest, it's got to be QT Marshall, right? We all agree that QT Marshall is the Nicolas Cage of AEW.
I don't know enough about him.
I thought it might have been Matt Hardy.
Matt Hardy, huh? Interesting.
That could be interesting. But QT Marshall. Although Matt Hardy, I think is on a higher level than Nick Cage in a weird way.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Incidentally, that does remind me something I wanted to highlight from that last match. Speaking of Nick Cage-esque performances, Rebel had an absolutely phenomenal reaction at one point to the carnage that was going on. Like Britt was about to do something especially bad and, you know, was extremely bloody, and there was this grotesque grin of delight also on Rebel's face about what was going on. It was pretty good.
Rebel consistently does.
So anyways, I guess if I had to land on something for Nicolas Cage, I think it might be Eddie Kingston.
Eddie Kingston is a good call.
Yeah.
Okay. Eddie Kingston and who was the other face?
MJF.
Okay. Okay. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Swap those faces in your head.
I am. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
It fills me with weird feelings.
You know, that's the original intent of the movie, to give everybody really weird feelings. So I think I did.
It's a good movie.
Job.
Just the opening sequence alone is like 10 action movies. You know, if you haven't seen it, check it out.
Do.
And tell us, who would you pick?
Yeah.
Did we get it right?
And tell us who in the movie Face Off would be your AEW champions.
In the movie Face Off?
Yeah, who from Face Off would be your belt holders in AEW?
Let me see.
Your what holders?
Belt holders.
Oh.
Something to ruminate on.
At least one of the grips, because they never get their due.
No.
At AE double back on Twitter, at AE _ double back on Instagram. Hit us up. Let us know.
Yeah.
And say hi.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, bye. Everybody.
Yeah. Bye.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, they're not going to hear it before St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, that's
over.
Right. I forgot.
Oh, you fucked up.